Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection, taking advantage of volatile times, is our latest addition to the webinar library open to InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. Now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition, May 24th, of InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with me like I do every time and every day. Now, how often do you visit the doctor for a checkup? Of course, it's recommended that we are supposed to go once a year, but do we for a physical conditioning checkup? And we have lots of excuses. You know, we don't have enough time. We're just too busy. That's the number one excuse, and I can totally understand that. It's understandable. I don't know if it's smart, but it's understandable. And then those of us who are afraid to hear what the results might be. You want to be ignorant. Ignorance is bliss. You know, but that's not good either. The whole line of thinking is also true for retirement portfolio reviews. See, you didn't think I could get that over there, did you? So the same thing is true. Checkup. I recommend, and you know I have, at least once a year, you take a look at your financial health. And it's an effort to try to avoid very expensive mistakes. Whether you do it on your own or have a professional help, it doesn't matter. The process is essentially to understand whether you're on course to meet your goals, whether you need to make some changes in your strategy, or maybe you need to save more money, maybe you need to be more aggressive or maybe less aggressive. The whole idea is to catch mistakes, to understand where you are and adjust them as you move toward retirement. You want to improve all your results. We all do. So a portfolio needs to be reviewed at least once a year. Take a look at it. Whether the risks have increased or decreased or things have changed in the economy or the whole market. I mean, think about this. Think about how retail sales go these days. You know, the big box stores we talked about a week ago, how poor, maybe 2 weeks ago, how poor they're doing against Amazon. What if you bought Macy's and JCPenney and you bought it 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and they were doing great? Now, huge sea change of how things are sold. So the big box stores are no longer a good idea to be in. So that's one way you can look at it when you take a look at a one-year review. You don't want to be a trader. That's not, you know, maybe that's fine. There's no issues with that. I don't have a problem with being a buy and holder. But things change over long periods of time, and sometimes there are dramatic changes that you need to adjust. So a portfolio checkup would do that. And I'm going to be in San Jose tomorrow. So if you wanted to do a portfolio checkup with a professional, you have tomorrow left. Just one more day. Now, I only have one slot open tomorrow, by the way, just so you know. And it's a 12 to 1 o'clock slot. And if you want to take it, you can still do that by emailing or calling my office tomorrow, the 800-557-5461. Talk to someone in the office, just let me know. They'll give you directions. It's right near the San Jose airport, but you need to let me know. Okay? So otherwise, I'm going to eat lunch. That's the other option for me. Now, do you have questions about your portfolio review, if you were going to have one? Maybe you viewed your portfolio and you're not sure if it's what you should be, or you have questions about it. You can always call here right now. We're open 24 hours a day. You can call. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. But the line is always open 24 hours a day to ask questions. So be happy to talk to you. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. Let's talk to George in Redwood City. How are you doing, George?
I'm pretty good. Today's not a bad day, I guess.
Yeah, well, good day up on the market.
Yeah. A question for you is on Gilead. I've seen it coming down. I was in it around 90 and bought in again around 81 at the bottom. And they have, I guess they got a new COO recently. I was just wondering what your thoughts were for the long term on Gilead, with the new guy coming in and whatever else you see down the road.
I think a new CEO is actually a pretty positive for the stock because of the issues they had with the old CEO and how they were doing connecting business and huge price increase, huge prices for a certain drug. And the reason why Gilead is selling such at such a steep discount is because of the reliance on just a few drugs. But I still like the company. I like the company. Number one, it's inexpensive. Sales have been coming down sharply, and that's one of the reasons why it's hurting. I mean, it was 100%. 2 years ago, the sales were growing 136%. Now they're only growing this most recent quarter, 3%. Before this quarter, it was 16%. Before that quarter, it was 37%. So, you know, the growth rate is slowing. So that's why the stock got beat up with a PE of 7. And it's 86.
Where do you see it out?
Pardon me?
Where do you see an out if you wanted to,
If you wanted to get out, it's a real strong number, in the low 80s, support I'm talking about. So, it would be very, if it dropped in the $75, I think I'd give up. But, it's bounced off the low 80s now twice. Once in January, from the big steep, and once just recently. So I think you're looking at probably a bottom being put in here. So I think you picked it up.
So we got a long ways to go.
Yeah, I think you bought it at a good price. It is definitely worth about $120, $130 a stock, the share.
That's what I want to hear. Okay, yeah. So you think it's a pretty safe stock. I mean, they're financially, balance sheet-wise, they're in a pretty good position.
Yeah, I never use the word safe, George, just because they might be lying to us, But as far as the fundamentals, this stock looks pretty darn solid. Okay? Good luck with it.
Okay.
I hope it works for you.
Thank you.
Gilead, G-I-L-D, develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. We've talked about it numerous times. Okay, let's take a text question. We've been getting a lot of text questions, so we want to get through them. Hi, Steve. Listen to you every day. Thanks for all the advice. Can you comment on Navient, N-A-V-I, N-A-V-I? The low PE stock is cheap. Think it might be growth and value stock. Thanks. Okay, let's take a look at it. Navient Corporations out of Wilmington, Delaware, provides loan management servicing and asset recovery services to repurchase additional 700 million shares. That was in December. It is a $4.2 billion company selling for $12.98 a share. It came out publicly in 2013. And let's see, it's going to make $1.99 next year after making $1.86 this year. So that makes it a fairly inexpensive stock with a PE ratio. Remember, it's a $13 stock. So well under 10, about 7 PE. Return equity is very good at 17%. Cash flow is strong with $2 a share. Pays a 5% dividend. Now, it can afford that. It can. And it carries a huge amount of debt. Well, that might be the type of business it's in. I'd have to take a look at it, but that would be where my focus would be. What's with all the debt that it's carrying? Is that debt helping you grow the company? Is that how you're doing it, by issuing debt? The stock has fallen. It was, a year ago it was at 22, 23. It fell all the way down to 8, and now it's at 13, $12.98 today. So it's fallen from its high, and it looks very solid financially. I mean, from a fundamental point of view, I think it looks pretty darn solid. And if you own it, you hold it. If you want to buy it, well, this might be a point where to buy it, because it's running right along the moving averages, trying to bounce off of them. So I kind of like that. It would be nicer if you could pick it up when it fell again. If the market corrects during the summer, which it probably will, it's going to correct between, you know, somewhere around the $9 area. That would be the perfect place to pick it up, if it does. Don't know if it will. Glad you can spend some time with us today. Don't hesitate to ask any money questions that's on your mind. Be aware of changes in your risk profile. In good markets, people tend to accept more risks than they do in bad markets. So how do you know what risk you really want to take? You can take our risk questionnaire that we have. It's free. It's a very short questionnaire. I mean, we're talking about 3 to 5 questions. Very easy to answer. It's on investtalk.com, investtalk.com. I welcome your call, 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Buffett's other big investment secrets. You know, there's a couple of things that maybe I can clarify why Warren Buffett is so successful. Granted, he's very smart. Wow, that's not even a question. But he has some advantages that us poor mere mortals don't have. But we're going to talk about that. That's going to be our main talking point. Millennials, unrealistic views on money. They had some there was a survey asking questions of millennials, and we got some surprising answers. They got some issues here. Citigroup thinks gold could go down to $1,000 an ounce if this happens. What is this? What if what happens? We'll discuss that. And a reason some people hate Costco. Now, I go to Costco all the time. I love Costco. But there are people who hate Costco, and there was a recent survey or article about what are some of the reasons why people hate Costco. And I am pretty surprised at the answers. So we're going to do that. It's a little bit less serious. Today we had a big update. The Dow was up 213 points, the NASDAQ up 95 points, and the SP up 28 points. So it was a pretty nice move upward today. Now, we're still down 1, 2% for the year, but it seems like we've been stuck. Doesn't it seem like we've been stuck? To me, it seems like we've been stuck in this, you know, we've been flat all the way back to May of last year when it peaked, and going back even further, almost another 8 or 9 months, the market has ranged from that to that low back then to a recent low in January, and in between that high of May of last year to all close to a high of that again earlier this year. And that range is where we've been stuck in. We have to break out our goals, you know, are correct. And when the even if a correction goes back 10%, another 10% correction, we're still in a bull market phase of the market since 2009. And that is getting very, very long in the tooth. But the longer we move sideways, the more we can say we're no longer in a bull market, that the market has corrected. And that's not unusual that the market corrects sector by sector. You know that? Did you know that? In other words, the whole market may not go down, but different sectors go down, and then it starts coming back, and another sector falls. We kind of seen that, have we not? We have. This, you know, we've had a very deep correction, was it last year, in biotech? Then we had a big, deep correction in oils and different commodities this year, early part of this year, late last year. So there's rotation in the correction, and it could do that. And then then the market set itself up for the next bull move up. Very possible. Granted, there's a lot of headwinds, and that we should have normal corrections some this summer. Should we fall into a bear market, though? Frankly, we should have already fallen in a bear market with all the problems and headwinds we've seen, but we haven't. Interesting. This is Invest Talk. Nothing could be more important in directing investment decisions than setting appropriate objectives. So you can buy different things. I understand you're buying, selling, you're investing, and you're doing great. But what are you trying to achieve? I'm going to talk about that a little more. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, just had a question on getting a loan. So it's a real estate question that I have. Wanted to see if there is a difference when you apply for a loan on a mixed-use property, mixed-use meaning residential and commercial. So wondered, is the rates, are they usually higher, and is it harder to qualify? Thank you. I'll be listening for the answer on your show. Bye.
Well, the quick answer is yes. They usually are higher. Yes. Mortgage rates in a house that you live in is usually the lowest rate, loan rate you can get. Now, if you bought a rental property, you would have to pay a higher fee and a higher closing cost, generally speaking. Now, I'm not an expert, but since I bought rentals over the years, I sold all of them in the summer of 2004, but over the years, I bought lots of them, and what I would do is I would pay extra on my home, and if I wanted to go buy a rental property, I would borrow money against my own house and go buy the rental property with that down payment, because I know the mortgage rate was a lot cheaper than going out and trying to get a loan on a rental property. It just is. Mixed-use property, commercial property, same thing is true. It's more expensive. So, yeah, they're going to want more protection. The bank is going to want more protection. That's basically what they're looking at. They think, for some reason, a homeowner, person living in the house, is the safest loan that they can have, which is kind of true. You want to protect your house, you know, so that's kind of true. So that's why. Pretty simple. So the quick answer is yes, okay? Buffett's other big investment secret. Warren Buffett, of course, the world's best investors, we all know that, has the Berkshire Hathaway stock. And Berkshire Hathaway owns a bunch of companies inside it, right? Okay? So one of the big advantages he has is fees. He tells you there's no fees. There really is no fees. He's not like a mutual fund where he charges a fee to manage it. No. He owns the company, Berkshire Hathaway, and it's publicly traded, and you own it. And when he gets money, he just goes out and buys some more whatever company or stocks. He likes to buy big chunks or all of the stock if he can. So you compare that with a mutual fund or a hedge fund. A hedge fund who is super expensive, 2% per year plus 20% of profits, he obviously can beat these people. But one of the things that no one really talks about when it comes to Warren Buffett is he has an inbuilt advantage because of the insurance companies, the Berkshire Hathaway Insurance Company. He has insurance companies that constantly bring in premium for him, right? That money constantly comes in. He hoards it and hoards it and hoards it. And he waits till there's a recession or a big, huge correction in something. And then he pounces on it with a lot of investments, tons of money, or buys a whole company, whatever he can do. And so he has more money coming in, and now more money and more money. So he can keep buying things at discount prices and be very, very methodical about it. A mutual fund doesn't have that luxury. Does not. There's no, you know, they don't. It's not like they have huge cash hoard coming in all the time. And they have people selling the stock, selling the fund all the time. Buffett doesn't very seldom get sales of his stock. Mostly it's buys and holds. You know, maybe he'll hold on for a long period of time. He's got some built-in advantages. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm just pointing it out. That's all I'm saying. Hedge funds have super underperformed, and people keep thinking that they're going to make a killing in a hedge fund. Hedge funds make a killing once in a while. Meanwhile, they get 2% a year. And when they do make profits, they get 20% of that. You're getting killed on fees from hedge funds. I would never invest in a hedge fund. It's just not smart. But every once in a while, they'll make 1,000%. See? But the ones who are unsuccessful just quietly go out of business. Happens all the time. So I would not be something I would recommend, hedge funds. Not for you and me, the average person. Just not wise. Now let's answer a text question again. Love your show and thanks for all the great info. My question is for Steve. Is the Fed, if the Fed, the Federal Reserve, raises interest rates, how, if at all, will it affect gold prices? Well, it's already affecting gold prices. Gold prices are already going down now. Nothing dramatic, but going down now because the expectation that the Fed might raise the rates. Might raise the rates. What's really, really fascinating to me is that the Fed raised the rates in December, right? Right. The Fed raised the rates in December. And usually that means strength to the dollar, and that means gold would go down. When the Fed raised the rates, the dollar weakened, went down. Gold went up. So will it happen again if the Fed actually raises the rates in June, because that's the next meeting, will that mean the dollar go down and the gold will go up like it did last time? Or will the dollar actually increase? See, the dollar is gaining strength now. Now. And the gold is under a little pressure going down. So when the fact comes out that they actually raise the rates, well, that's going to already be built into the market. Now, what if it's just something surprises us? What if the Fed actually doesn't raise the rates, which frankly I think they shouldn't? But the odds are that they are going to. But what if they don't? Then what will happen? Interesting, huh? 888-99-CHART. You're listening to Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing. If you'd like to take Steve up on his offer, it's really pretty easy. He meets with a limited number of our podcast subscribers on Skype or telephone. This is a way to benefit from his expertise, get his view of your retirement portfolio, and get some ideas if you'd like. It can be a very educational hour. To set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Steve calling from Bend, Oregon. I'm a podcast listener and appreciate your program very much. I have heard you say many times that the price of a stock doesn't really tell you about whether it's cheap or expensive. That is, a $5 stock can be very expensive and a $100 stock can be a bargain. And I ran across this fund called the Fidelity Low-Priced Stock Fund, which is ticker symbol F like Frank, LPSX. And in its description, it says that they invest at least 80% of their assets in low-priced stocks, those priced at or below $35 per share. I assume that they must use price as their cutoff, but also vet the companies. But it seems odd that they basically only invest in assets at a low price. And they seem to be doing okay, though. The five-year return is about 9%. So I'm just a little confused about that. I wonder if you have any comments about that fund. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you might want to remember, this is FLPSX, Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund. You might want to remember that mutual funds play, I don't want to say play, mutual funds market their funds using any techniques they think will be successful. And people like to buy low-priced stocks because they think that they're cheap. When, as I said, and as you point out, stocks aren't cheap, and they're only cheap in relationship to their earnings, their fundamentals. But as a sales tool, hey, buy the Fidelity low-priced stock because we buy low-priced stocks with the assumption that the low prices are go up. Well, no, that's not true. But at the same time, that Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund uses certain techniques to make sure the low price also meets certain fundamental analysis benchmarks. So it's not just because it's low priced. But it is a great sales tool because people buy into the quote-unquote low price talk or low price marketing. Yeah, remember, they make money by gathering money. They use any method they can. And if this makes sense as far as my marketing technique, great. That's what it is. That's what it's all about. You know, everybody thinks that the mutual funds have your best interest in. No. They do want you to make money. That's no issues whatsoever. But that's not their primary goal. Their primary goal is to make money for themselves. To convince you to buy their funds. Now, hopefully the biggest convincing is that they have good returns, and hopefully they can continue those returns. I mean, but there's no guarantee of that. But very good point as far as why is it called Fidelity Low Price and what's the vantage, you know. Very, very good point. Anyways, 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. They did some survey about millennials, and millennials have very unrealistic views on money. For instance, millennials think they're going to retire between the ages of 80 and 90. They think that they kind of, some of them think they have to work that long because of whatever reason, and some of them think they're going to work that long. Let me tell you what the real life is though. You're not going to be able to work at between up to age 80s and 90s. Many people will be forced to retire or get laid off, or you won't be working. You know that we talked about several months ago about the number of people who are 65 who are retired because they had to retire, not because they wanted to retire, either for health reasons or whatever reasons there were. So, you know, the millennials don't have a realistic view about that. 80, 90, still working? Don't think so. The millennials don't think they need help in their finances either to reach their retirement goals. They don't think they need the professional help, or don't want it, don't think they need it. That might be true, but it's not true if you don't pay attention and learn it yourself. They also have unrealistic views on salary. They think they're going to be making $150,000, $200,000 by the time they're 30. That's not real life. Now, of course, there's going to be those group who make that and more, but not generally. They have unrealistic views. One of the problems that they have that they don't really appreciate is the debt level of their student loans, that will really retard their growth of their retirement accounts, because they got to pay that debt off. They just have some unrealistic views. Not all of them, of course, but it was interesting listening to the answers by them of certain questions. It's just, I don't know. Here's a question from a listener that came in via text again. I am interested in your evaluation of the ETF VDE. Is it too late to jump in? Should I wait for a possible summer correction? Thanks for any help you can provide. V as in Victor, everybody. V, D as in dog, E as in Edward. VDE is the Vanguard Energy ETF. Energy. Energy, everybody. Excuse me. Exchange traded funds seeking performance corresponding to the U.S. Energy 2550 Index. So this thing has shot up from like $2 to $8.50, and now it's coming off, you know, about 4 or 5 days ago at $8.50. Now it's coming off to $7.33. Yes, don't jump in it now. That's chasing performance. You're just chasing. You know, it's shot up from February till just a few days ago, and you're just chasing that performance. You got to wait for a pullback. Excuse me. If you don't wait for a pullback, you're going to be the ones that the buyers who bought it early are selling to. So yeah, never, ever, ever chase performance. After something's shot up a lot, you don't jump into it. You'll be the last ones to jump into it. You don't. Don't chase performance. As we enter an unprecedented summer with expected volatility, which we're going to have, many investors flock or stay invested in large cap branded companies. Now, InvestTalk insiders could see our brand new list of overvalued companies. You can sign up for free at InvestTalk.com. Now, why do we give you a list of overvalued companies? These are companies to avoid right now, but you can watch when they become undervalued with the next correction. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
There is really no downside to it. It costs only an hour of your time. A retirement review, getting a second opinion about your accounts and your direction. Steve will be in San Jose tomorrow, May 25th, for these individual one-hour informal meetings. If you're out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone on May 31st. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Justin. Raphael from Jersey. My comment is this value versus growth investing. I have some really good growth stocks in my portfolio, and I'm just wondering, considering if someone has a very long-term time horizon on their holdings, would that sway your judgment of value versus growth? I am in my early 40s, and obviously I'm working and everything, so I don't have a need to draw any of my money down for another maybe 20, 25 years. Would it be more prudent for me to kind of go into the value investing way or to recognize a couple of superior growers that will be growing probably for the next 10 years or so and kind of use a lot of the lifting of my portfolio on those names or, you know, kind of small ball it, you know, and be somewhat safer? Thanks. Bye.
Okay, that was a very good question. You know, value versus growth. And we've said on the radio that over long periods of time, value does better than growth. And it does. Long 10, 20, 30-year period, it does. Does that mean you don't have any growth stocks? No. Don't, you know, if I could teach anybody anything, it is not to get so enamored of any one way to invest or one thing that this is going to be the best thing, just this one thing. No, diversify. We're saying that if you're going to be a long-term investor, the value side of the ledger is the one that works better. At certain periods of time, growth far outperforms value. Over long periods of time, value outperforms. So, but if you've got some good, solid growth stocks, you don't just sell them because it's you heard that you should be in value. No, keep your growth stocks. But if you're really long-term, you want to wait and buy with your cash value positions and just be patient. You got to be patient like Warren Buffett. Just because you have money to invest doesn't mean you have to invest it. You can wait for a while. And Warren Buffett waits for years. There's several years to go by, he'll wait. He feels no compunction to buy anything at all. Something has to come along that really attracts him. So, and that's what investing is. Big part of investing is being patient. And people are not patient whatsoever. You got to be patient. So don't just dump your growth stocks just because we're saying value. We believe that value is the thing you want to be in now. Non-cyclicals is the investment choice you should be in now. Non-cyclical type stocks. And be a bit defensive. And that has worked really good for us this year. Now, that those same positions last year wasn't so good, but this year it's working way better than the market. So, you know, don't just drop your growth. Don't. But I think it's time to be a bit careful. Even after a good day like today, market being up 213 points on the Dow, yeah, so, you know, it's certainly not a new high. It's not even close, so. Let's tackle another text question from a podcast listener. Hi, Stephen. I really enjoy the podcast. You provide great info. I currently own the natural gas ETF, FCG. FCG, let's put that in there. I purchased it at $6.74. Wow, it's net $24.01 now. So we bought it at $6.74. I'm afraid that some of the holdings may go bankrupt. I am willing to hold 5 years. What is your opinion? Thanks, Stephen in Syracuse. Okay, Syracuse, New York. Well, there's that old saying that I mention every so often. There's bear, bulls, and pigs. And if you bought this darn thing at $6.74 and it's $24 now, and I'm trying to see where you bought it at $6.74, maybe I have to go back further. Huh, I don't ever see it at $6.74 unless it has some kind of Anyways, I've never seen it. But let's say you did. Okay, you had it at $6.74. I don't see it, but FCG, right? Yeah, and it's the First Reserve Natural Gas. Yeah, so I'm not. Anyways, you take some profits. You take some profits. If you bought it, that's 400% return. I take a little bit off the table. You know, that means that this is now think of it this way. It's now four times bigger in your portfolio. Is your portfolio now out of balance because of this one ETF? Do you have too much natural gas stock? What percentages of your portfolio? See, if something like this happened to us in our managed accounts, we would start cutting back simply because, one, you don't want to be a pig because there are bears, bulls, and pigs get slaughtered, so you don't want to be one of those. And you want to take profits naturally because nothing grows to the sky. Nothing. Now, does this mean natural gas won't continue up? Oh, it could easily. But we certainly have plenty of it out there, so it could easily fall, too. It would be something I would take profits on. Citigroup thinks gold could go down if this happens. And what it is talking about, what this is they're talking about the dollar. If the dollar goes up, gold will go down. And dollar is bouncing off a low right now, has been for 2 or 3 weeks, and it's putting pressure on gold prices. It really is. They think, though, gold's going to go down to $1,000 an ounce or less if the dollar keeps rising. Well, the dollar is, first of all, is not going to keep rising. Remember, the dollar is traded against other currencies. That means the other currencies have to keep getting weaker. Now, that could happen. Remember, our U.S. dollar got strong all last year. Put a lot of pressure on gold and precious metals and oil. Everything went down because the dollar kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Well, now it's gotten a little bit weaker this year, and now it's bouncing again. Well, but is it going to keep getting stronger and stronger and stronger against other currencies? Well, I don't think so, because the other currencies have already given up a lot of their value, and they have been doing QEs up the yin-yang that can't continue forever. Okay, and our economy is not that strong. GDP the first quarter wasn't that strong. It was weak. So we're not that great either. And we have huge debt issues. We have our own set of major problems, just like everybody else does around the world. So it's just hard for me to see that the dollar will get that strong. Long term, I do think the dollar will probably increase against other currencies. But we're talking 10 years, 15 years. Yeah, I think slowly it will get stronger. Because I have faith in the U.S. economy over that period of time. So, I just don't think Citigroup is right here. They could, but I just don't think so. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, we can take it. 888-99-CHART. $88.99. We're going to go talk to a podcaster, G, in Houston. How you doing, G?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a regular listener in the podcast, and I love your show. So
thank you.
I'm calling to ask about a company, oil and gas company, NBR, Neighbor.
Neighbors Industries. Okay. Do you want to buy it, or you already own it?
I already own a couple of thousand shares of this, and
okay.
I recently bought it.
Okay. Neighbors Industries, it provides oil and gas, land, offshore drilling, land well, and workover services worldwide. It is a $2.3 billion company. They lost 8 cents a share last year. They're going to lose $1.71 a share this year and $1.32 next year. So they're losing money. Sales have gone from about $1.4 to $1.7 billion a quarter. This quarter, they only made $430 million. So they're really, really taking it on the chin with this oil fall. And did it hit a bottom? Yes, it hit a bottom right around a little bit above $5, like $5.25 or so. Now it's at $8.21. It got as high as $11. And this is only in the last 6 months, so it's been very volatile here recently. Long-term, I don't really care for it because it's going to lose money this year and lose money next year. So for me, you're going to hit either a home run, G, or this company is going to really go down the tube because they got lots of debt and they're not making any money. Have decent cash flow. Money is flowing, but they can't keep losing money. So I'd be very, very careful with this one, Gia. NBR.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. NBR, Neighbors Industry. If it survives, the stock can go back to where it was. And it was in this, for low 20s. And I mean, and if it can make money and it survives, if the oil prices turn around, yeah. But can it last? I'd have to take a look at the debt, and they have lots of debt, and see what their cash reserves are, those kinds of things. Just doing it on the radio is very difficult to get a really good sense of the company. Reason some people hate Costco. Now, I really like Costco myself. I'm a big Costco person, physically shopping there. We're not talking about the stock necessarily, even though that's done well too. But reasons why some people hate Costco, and I think they're quite humorous, actually. One reason some people hate Costco is because they only take one credit card. Right now, it's American Express, and it's going to go to Citigroup's Visa this month or next month. And they give you great cashback benefits, but some people hate it because they only take one card. That makes no sense to me. What do you care what card they take or whether they just take one? Lines at the checkout. Now, I've been in those lines, and they move pretty darn fast. I have never been in a line that I sat there for a long period of time, but some people hate those lines. Products are not always there. Now, I can understand that better, because they do. Some products just are not there, and they have new products coming in all the time, and then all the stuff that maybe you get used to something, and that is all and it's gone. Now, of course, when you buy the product, like if you're in my family, which is just me and my wife, you buy something and it lasts forever because they give you 10 cans of refried beans or corn or whatever. It's just a lot. But I can see that. You like something and then they don't have it anymore. No shopping bags. Why is that even an issue? Who cares? No delivery. Now, sometimes that's a problem because of the bigger items. You have to hire someone to deliver it if you don't have a truck or something to pick it up. Like you buy an 80-inch TV or patio furniture, five-piece patio furniture. You don't have any place. But they have services to deliver it to you. And this last one, it just amazes me. No shopping advice. Like if you're buying wine, you can't ask somebody, does this wine taste good? Are you crazy? No shopping advice. Why do you think the prices are so cheap? Because it's bulk buying and they keep costs down. Anyways, I like Costco. Our time is up. I do have one slot open tomorrow for portfolio reviews in San Jose, 12 to 1. Go to click on the InvestTalk tab to reserve your time if you want it. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today, everybody. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.